Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. I am your host, Sean Hayes. This is episode 295, and here to bring you the latest and greatest gaming news of the past week. Hope everyone's doing well. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, if you're in the United States. And that you did not get trampled by the hordes on Black Friday. Been playing a lot of Warcraft Rumble. I think I do agree with the sentiment that progression feels very slow unless you're going to drop money. And I think PvP is just nonsensical in that game. Like the PvE content is much better designed. Because like there's some weird map irregularities in PvP that, like, if you exploit them, like you're pretty much guaranteed a win. And if you don't, you kind of lose. Which, like, that seems like a bit of an oversight. So, but yeah. So doing that, got a bunch of news, both some tabletop news, mostly gaming news, and the Game Awards are coming up. So we'll see kind of what happens with that. But we do have some Game Awards related news. Not as, because like Thanksgiving is always a tough week to do news for. Like there's not really a lot that drops, and like it's a short week. Like we didn't travel this year, but we still had quite a bit going on, and then kiddo was sick like all this past week, you know, from that. So all right. Why don't we get into this week's news topics, shall we? All right. So first up, Baldur's Gate 3, Polygon reports that a new epilogue introduced in patch 5. So patch 5 is now out, basically introduced a whole bunch of new epilogues. Pretty big patch. so a lot of video and audio content in there. But one particular epilogue moment canonizes fan favorite Bing Bong, the small imp that was sort of semi-adopted by Shadowheart in the Baldur's Gate 3 one-shot, a two-part one-shot that was run by Mark Hulmes of Erois. or High Rollers. I'm sorry, Erois was their second campaign. Of High Rollers, starring the cast. This is, you know, like, if you don't play Baldur's Gate 3, you don't really follow it, like, this is whatever news. But, like, I wanted to include this because I have not seen this level of engagement from, like, both the development studio and cast of a project. Not since, like, Fire Emblem Three Houses. And I think it's, like, pretty special that, like, you know, pretty much the main cast, like, went all in on, like, oh, you know, yeah, like, I'm going to play the game and stream the game and interact with the community and everything. And, like, and that it's been a pretty good experience from as far as I can tell. There doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem to be, you know, or at least gotten to the point where the fandom starts getting problematic. And everyone's having some good fun. So, like, it's the fact that Larian kind of retroactively added in something as a response to this one shot. Like, that they sponsored. that like just came out of left field. So it's a little bit of a spoiler, but I think it's fine to let people know about this. And if you're not aware, so Bing Bong is basically a little imp that was like a doorman at just this like market. And so like he would open the door and like say Bing Bong to people that that exited or entered the building. So it's sort of, you know, the D&D version of like automatic doors and a bell. And he just immediately fan favorite. So yeah. So that's just fun to see him included, and rest in peace, Bing Bong. Next up, Destructoid reports that Game Awards host Jeff Keighley addressed why Dave the Diver was nominated for Best Indie Game, despite its development studio being sort of a subsidiary of Nexon, which is huge publisher, huge South Korean publisher. Keighley's argument it essentially boiled down to, like, it's the size of the dev team and what they believe the game's budget to be. And then ultimately, like, nominations and stuff boil down to, like, who the team of judges using kind of their best judgment as to what qualifies as, like, an indie game or not. You know, unfortunately, this kind of goes into the sort of weird fluid definition of what is an indie game. Because, like, is it just something that's developed by an independent studio? Because if that's the case, then, like, Baldur's Gate 3 also qualifies. Or is it intended to be, you know, something of, like, smaller scope, small budget? But, you know, as in the case with David the Diver, but, you know, something that could be part of a larger publishing group. There is a concern that it might just be anything that kind of feels like an indie game, and has sort of pixel art graphics. But, you know, since it's all based on sort of how it feels and not like strict definitions, you know, somebody could win that maybe doesn't necessarily fit the category, is the concern. I think it's going to be tough. This is sort of is a hot dog a sandwich question, of like what is an indie game? I took a bunch of philosophy courses in college. This would be a great question for those courses, because like this is the kind of stuff that they do, is to be like, you know, I took one course that was like defining like what is a sport versus a game, and like what is an indie game seems to be a great philosophical question for those who are of that bent, because it means figuring out like what are all the things that feel like indie games, and then trying to find what is the common ground among all of them, and then coming up with a definition that then excludes stuff that might fit but doesn't feel like one, right? Because if you're going by, you know, independent developer or independent development studio, it's not really equivalent of like Larian Studios, say, versus like when he was first starting out, Concerned Ape of Stardew Valley, where it was just him for 4 years, you know, working on one game. I don't know. But also, yeah, it's just weird. So, I was not aware, that the dev studio was part of Nexon, So, you know, I think that goes to show, which, and, you know, an assumption could be made that, like, maybe it doesn't have a great, maybe it didn't have a very big budget. But it's unclear, and we're never going to be sure, because, you know, the dev studio has the backing of, like, a giant, massive publisher. You know, it would be like saying if there was some, like, really tiny team that was working on a project for Nintendo. You know, like, would, you know, like, if there was, like, Mario Puzzle Battle or something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll have to see, you know. I don't know if I don't know who else is nominated for that category. It may be the case that this is just a nothing burger. You know. But I think if Dave the Diver wins Best Indie Game, I wonder if there's going to be some sort of discourse as to if there should be stricter qualifications for what constitutes an indie game for that category. So, all right, next up, Dragon's Dogma 2, Capcom premiered a showcase of the upcoming title, which I had kind of vaguely heard that it was coming out, but, like, had completely forgotten about it. So when I saw this, I was, like, blown away. I have played Dragon's Dogma 1. I have it on Switch, but, like, haven't gotten very far. It's one of those where, like, I want to try and go back to it. I feel like I've hit a wall in that game. But they gave an overview of the story, which basically it's kind of standard fantasy fare, except they showcased, like, two main sort of antagonists that are both sort of nobles vying for the throne. And, like, one of them is gathering people under, oh, I forget the name. But it's basically the, like, your character. They create, like, a false persona for somebody else that, like, is supposedly this other type of champion to rally people under that cause. And then the other one is, like, the other one's like a cat person, the other noble, and they're kingdom is, like, anti-magic or something like that. So so both, like, antagonistic in that regard. They showed off the character creation process, bonuses in the deluxe edition, which include, like, gear and stuff. But since, you know, I don't think there's any PvP. So, you know, that's whatever. and then some new sort of character options, like some new classes and stuff like that. Game looks great. They showed off some of the enemies as well, like the Drake is one of them. So if just fighting a big old dragon. And they showed off like this big, giant, absolute massive titan and how that encounter changes based on your class's fighting style. So they showed, like, melee characters are going to get all, the PS2, Shadow of the Colossus style, just, like, using various methods to, like, grapple onto, or, you know, we're Monster Hunter Iceborne, grapple onto this big titan and just, like, start smashing at weak points. I kind of feel sad, like, the archer one was, like, the least exciting because it's just like, oh, yeah, you're just standing there and you're just shooting arrows at it. And it's like, ugh. Like, it makes sense. Like, the whole point is to not get involved, like, right up close. But it seems, like, much more dynamic if you're playing a melee class. So that was pretty cool. The game is set to release March 22nd, 2024. I don't know what platforms it's being released for. I know I'm sure it's going to be released on PS5 and maybe Xbox Series X or whatever. My hope is Steam. I'm hoping that it'll come to Steam. Because, yeah, I really, like, I like the concepts that are in the first game. It's just one of those where I got to go back and find time to go back and play it. So, yeah, Dragon's Dogma 2 coming March 22nd. Next up, Polygon reports an exclusive preview from Paizo. Their upcoming book, Howl of the Wild, which is the first new book published for Pathfinder 2nd Edition Remaster. Which is, we're starting to get into like Square Enix naming conventions here. or Nintendo, like the new Nintendo 3DS XL, is what this kind of feels like. Excuse me. So part bestiary, part player supplement. The book tries to further distinguish Pathfinder from its sort of original DNA in Dungeons and Dragons. namely, like getting away from designs of creatures that were present in D&D, coming up with like new designs for creatures. You know, namely things like getting away from like metallic and chromatic dragons and essentially coming up with their own set of dragons and things like that. You know, otherwise, like, I mean, the problem is there's just so many different monsters that are in D20 products that like it's a little hard to come up with something that feels iconic to your setting. As opposed to it kind of just being like, you know, oh, well, this is just sort of generic high fantasy D&D. I mentioned player options. There will be archetypes as well as ancestries in the book, which is something that you don't necessarily see a lot of in D20 products, unless it's going to be like a full campaign guide. But some archetypes that were shown in the preview include the Wild Mimic, which the description was basically Blanka from Street Fighter, is like you're doing a lot of like trampling, rending, generating electricity, rolling around. Like it was weird. Like it was very oddly specific. Swarmkeeper, which... you know, there was some artwork of like a goblin that has like bees coming out of their robe, which, you know, we do kind of have a swarm keeper in Dungeons and Dragons, so that's not necessarily a new concept. But we'll see what sort of take there is on it in this book. And a whole, it made it sound like it was one sort of archetype template or one archetype that had like tons of features to it, but like weird creature as an archetype. I love that. I love the thought of doing sort of things like that, of sort of monstrous identities that are sort of put onto a person, so like vampire or werewolf or something like that, and representing it like as a class that you would pick up. I think that's a much more elegant solution than third editions like applying templates on stuff and everything. And also fourth edition did the vampire class, and it was pretty debate on whether it was any good, but it was at least mechanically interesting. So yeah, I think this is a great path to go with this, is to make it an archetype. And then your class features basically become features of, you know, those monsters. I think they gave some examples of things like Pack Tactics, for like werewolves, or there was something for like echolocation for werebats. So yeah, that book, hardcover is not slated until next year, along with the hardcovers for the other, remaster books. But the PDF should be available, sooner, I believe. So next up, Games Radar reports, just did a sort of a little preview on Rusty's retirement. So I wanted to highlight this because, you know, I'm a big fan of farming sims. This is apparently just a very charming little idle farm sim. So idle games are games where you can basically set it up and then let the game run itself. You know, and then you can, like, go back in and you can, like, manually manipulate some things. But, like, the intent is, like, you're able to just, like, let it run and sort of keep going. And it's intended to, like, that you can, like, squish it down so that it just occupies, like, a corner of your desktop. It's just, like, a little sort of little pop-up. But it revolves around building a network of, like, tiny little robots that help run your farm. So, the developer has, like, developed a bunch of other little, like, charming little robot games before. And the game is set to launch quarter one of 2024 on Steam. No early access as far as I can tell. Unless it's going to launch into early access, but I don't know. They didn't really make any mention of that on their page. So it's honestly a little refreshing to see if something just like fully launches. So yeah, so that'll be something to keep an eye on if you're a fan of like idle games, or farm sims, or efficiency games. I should say, like efficiency systems games. This seems like it would be right up your alley. And our last bit of news, Reuters reports that embattled engine provider Unity is terminating its agreement with Weta FX only 2 years after purchasing Weta's technology and engineering division. This termination will result in the layoff of 265 employees as Unity currently undergoes a quote-unquote company reset. So, continuing not great news out of Unity, it seems like they are trying to refocus. I guess the internal perception is that maybe they spread themselves a bit too thin. This kind of sucks. This sucks. You know, it's not a very large percentage of Unity's overall workforce, but it is, like, the vast majority of the employees at that division. And so, you know, I don't know if Weta FX, like, if they were just, like, looking for the cash investment, and that's why they allowed the sale to Unity or something. Yeah, and it's unclear as to what the state of that division is going to be. Like, if it's just going to be dissolved, or, like, if somebody else is going to swoop in and buy it. But yeah. Nah, it's not great. And Unity, it just continues to kind of disappoint. Along with, yeah, you're right up there with Embracer and other folks in that realm. So, well, folks, that's it for the news for this week. So I think a big highlight for me, I think personally, is the Baldur's Gate 3-1. I still haven't finished the game, so my hope is that by the time I actually get around to finishing it, there will be like all sorts of goodies for when you complete the game. And then Dragon's Dogma 2, that'll be exciting coming in March. I won't have any time to play it, as we will have a newborn around that time. But yeah, very, there's a lot of folks and communities that I'm involved with who are very excited for that game. So I will be super pumped to see, to like watch streams and gameplay of it. So, so that wraps things up. Thank you all for joining me. If you would like to see more content from 8-Bit Adventures, you can check out the website at 8bitadventures.com. If you would like to help support that content, the best way to do that is to become a patron at patreon.com/8bitadventures. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. And that gets you, that helps support, you know, podcasts, comics, web hosting, all that stuff. Every little bit helps. Thank you to, patrons for your continued support. And finally, our opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his stuff over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. And with that, I'll see you next week. So as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.